Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 40K Fireside Podcast. I'm David Gaylor, and I'm joined by my good friend, Vic Vijay. Together, we discuss 40K in the meta from our perspective, along with events we've recently been to and those that have got coming up. So come on down to the fireside and listen.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 50 of 40K Fireside. I cannot believe we've made it to 50. What? 50? What an incredible milestone, Dave.
Wow. It's been a long time. When did we start? We started about 2 years ago, right? So we do roughly an episode a week, round about that, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, episode every 2 weeks, roughly, I'd say, is
our
average.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been managing to stick to the schedule approximately while still kind of tweaking things depending on how exciting 40K is at the time. Yeah. And we now come into episode 50, but you might notice that we're kind of splitting this into two parts. So this is 50.1. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're doing that is this episode is going to be more of our normal kind of talking about the meta, what's going on, what we're up to. But we're also going to be doing a stream game between me and Dave. A lot of people have messaged in asking for that. And we're just waiting for the balance or the points update to come through so that we can give you something that's a little bit more relevant. Yes. What do you think, Dave? That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Yeah, it'll be cool. I've got a little bit of overlaying and stream set up to organize. But as Vic mentioned, this will be episode 50.1, and then we'll do 50.2 probably sometime next week. So we don't know when the points are going to come out, full disclosure. So we're going to aim for most likely like the 26th, 27th, 28th, which will be like maybe the Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And then it'll be a stream game probably in the evening, our time GMT plus zero. So I'll put out some stuff on the socials and whatnot like that about when the date actually gets locked in. But if the points do come out next week, that's when it'll be. And as Vic mentioned, as you'll probably find out during this episode, I haven't really been playing that much. Kind of been sitting around twiddling my thumbs, waiting for the game to change a little bit. And yes, but we know we're really excited to be finally playing a stream game as well. So it'll be live. You guys can come and chat with us, and we can talk shit and banter and stuff like that as well. And we'll try and make it, of course, as educational as possible. But yeah. But what are we going to be covering this episode, Vic?
Yeah, Dave. So we're kind of in that little bit of a dead time before an update. And we love doing this because we love to guess what's going to be happening and what's going to be changing in the game and seeing just how close we can get to what actually happens. Mm-hmm. So we've definitely got that to look forward to in this episode, but also it's kind of a little bit of a dead time in terms of tournaments, other stuff going on in life. And yep. I know you really wanted to touch on kind of things that you can do just while 40K is a little bit quiet. And just life in general. And for me, on my side, the Team England stuff is starting to ramp up, the practice going towards that, and now we're just in that transition phase between kind of switching from singles over to team tournaments for the next few months. But I do have a super major coming up this weekend, which is the Oxford super major, and I'm going to be going away from the skew, away from the spam with the Grey Knights, and back to more of a play style that I'm used to, which is going to be the Adeptus Sororitas, the Sisters of Battle, for this one. And I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, nice. And that's the Oxford tournament, so it's the first time that tournament's been running this year, isn't it? That's been a newly added one to the schedule. And it's quite popular, isn't it? I think there was like 250, 260 players in that event.
Yeah, just over 250, which actually caught me a bit by surprise because that's one of the larger super majors.
Yeah.
And maybe it's to do with the location. A lot of these tournaments tend to be in Birmingham North or north of Birmingham, whereas this one sits right in between Birmingham and London. And I think it attracts a lot of people from London, but also the people from the north can access it much easier as well.
Yeah, and it's super easy to get a train to Oxford as well. So really cool. And it's a nice city, especially in the summer. Like it's a really nice place to go play a tournament this time of year, especially if the weather's good.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't go to the next few super majors. We've got the international team tournament coming up, but then otherwise, I don't really have any singles events up until WTC being a team event. So,
there we go. So let's stick on topic with Oxford. What exactly are you playing? You're playing Sisters. We all know they're OP. They get way too many dice. This is a reflection of our team chat, of course, guys.
In our team Ignite chat, I think it's just whatever. It's like 80% reality and 20% how to annoy Vic. Yeah. And a big part of it is sisters are really strong at the moment. They have very strong mechanics as well as an army that's quite cheap. And I think as 10th edition has kind of progressed, just having a lot of stuff on the board is quite strong for the way the 10th edition missions play. Mm-hmm. And sisters definitely lean into that really nicely. So I haven't really innovated extensively with my sisters, but I have been thinking about it a little bit. Because for any particular terrain format and kind of meta, you have to consider different things that will make your army a little bit stronger. So, for example, there's a unit called Paragon Warsuits, which goes alongside Morvenval. And this is a hammer unit for the Sisters of Battle. It's very, very powerful, but the mobility is quite limited on it. It moves 8 inches, big bases, and they only move and they're vehicles, so they can't go through walls. Yeah. But they'll absolutely kill anything they touch. Now, on some terrain formats, let's say Games Workshop, you can put those behind these 2-inch high walls where you can be safe and you can move directly through them and access the middle of the board. On WTC, there's a few more hiding spots in the corner of the board. So if you want to come out of rapid ingress or strategic reserves, you can tuck yourself in behind a wall and still be able to come around the side and attack things. Mm-hmm. UKTC doesn't really have that. If you want to come out of strategic reserves and you want to be able to activate the next turn, you're almost definitely going to be in an open space on the side of the board.
Yeah.
And not to mention, I found in my testing, so, you know, in the past, I'd say I've done 8 games in a row where I've used this unit, and none of them on GW terrain. And every single game, they have felt like they've been a waste of points in my army, because I've played against really good players who've just pushed them all the way into the corner of the board.
Yeah.
They're so incredibly easy to screen out. I made the decision, I'm just going to cut them from my list and just go as wide as possible with all the other good stuff the Sisters has to offer.
Yeah. So, and when you've got a unit that has so many points invested into it, your opponent's equation of, you know, am I going to spend 50 points, 60 points, 70 points to screen this unit out is more and more profitable for them, right? Because, you know, if you've got a unit that's only 150 points and they're actually investing to screen that out, then, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to bleed off a lot more units. But if your big ham unit's 300 plus points, then it's a lot more incentive for them to actually be proactive on screening.
Exactly. Like, you don't feel like you're unnecessarily giving away your resources if you're actually pushing this back and maintaining your momentum through the game. Yeah. And I think the same can be said of any hammer unit that's slow moving. They all need good delivery methods, which can't be stopped. And, you know, we see these 3-inch deep strikes, these units that move really, really fast. Those things can play around it, but a slow moving unit only playing out of strategic reserves without long range shooting, it's actually really tough to activate, especially if it costs a lot of points, like you said.
Yeah, for sure.
So
nice.
Yeah.
What's the list? Give us a quick rundown.
Let's do it. So
Before that, what I wanted to say was, I noticed on UKTC, so I think Sisters are a little bit worse for sure. And I've kind of struggled to summarize in one sentence the difference between UKTC and WTC terrain. Mm-hmm. But the thing that strikes me the most is that on UKTC, you have perpendicular and parallel ruins to deployment zones and the board edges, which are baseless as well. So where on UKTC, you have 90 degree angular ruins at parallel perpendicular angles. WTC, you have kind of similar coverage, but they're all angled 30% in one direction, which creates actually like a lot more dynamic rate. Like, you know, typically you can hide less and you can move less to get an angle onto shooting a unit. I don't know. Does that kind of hit the notes?
Yeah, I think for me, there's two particular features of UKTC compared to WTC that changes the meta quite significantly. Mm-hmm. The first one is the distance between staging runes. And by that, I mean UKTC tends to have its kind of outside ruins. So the midboard ruins tend to be right on the edge of your deployment zone. Mm-hmm. And the distance between those ruins and your opponent's similar position ruins is quite long. Mm-hmm. So your units, even if they move 18 inches, they can't get around and see there from their safe staging position. So in order to stage an attack with units that move relatively slowly, you need to spend a turn out in the open to be able to get over to where you need to go. And the second one is the sides of the board. The sides of the board between those two staging ruins, which the 2 points kind of add up, but the very edges of the board are very open on UKTC. And what that means is that units coming out of strategic reserves with long range shooting can shoot down quite long angles on the UKTC. So while the angles into the deployment zone from your deployment zone are quite limited, it's pretty much completely blocked out. The angles from the edges of the board into the opponent's deployment zone are quite open.
It's difficult, because obviously on the angular missions, Crucible of Battle, like the UKTC board feels mega heavy. Like you can hold both objectives 100% safe. It's almost impossible to shoot. It's like a shooting army's worst nightmare, that mission. Whereas like the corner one is obviously kind of, there's a lot of play from strat reserve where you can, you know, the lines across the outsides of the board allow a lot of space to shoot directly onto objectives. So I guess it's, you know, you could probably say it's a good balance in that perspective.
I'd say though, there's 7 rounds and 6 of those rounds favor long range sideboard shooting. So for example, if you're going to take your guard, you potentially look at leaning into a second tank commander rather than just running one, which you might do at WTC. And then if you're playing sisters, you might look at running a third castigator rather than the two you would run at WTC. Because those types of vehicles work really nicely on UKTC.
Although the Crucible of Battle is like the worst place to play a tank commander on.
Oh, really? Is it just not getting angles?
Your opponent can just sit on their outside objective and there's no way you can see into it. You need to move about 20 inches in one go before you can see around that U-shaped ruin. That one's really tough for them, but yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting how armies can perform differently on UKTC versus WTC and GW, isn't it? You know, so it's kind of cool when you see the reflections there. So it's kind of cool that you can see a unit like the wall suits be a little bit more viable on one terrain format versus the other and stuff. So yeah, anyway, a little bit of a side tangent. What are you bringing?
One last point on the war suits. Because the Americans seem to get a lot of success out of war suits. And what I found out is the people who are getting more success with it are not strategic reserving it. They're just starting it directly on the board. And I think that's something you can only do on GW terrain. So for anyone playing on UKTC or WTC, like, strongly consider potentially dropping that little crutch of having the Paragon warsuits and see how strong the list becomes. Yeah. Because I have a feeling it's quite a bit stronger outside GW without the Paragon suits.
Yeah.
So I've dropped them from my list, Dave, and I'm running Saint Celestine, the Triumph of Saint Catherine, and I'm also running a Canoness instead of the Palatine. So I've got a Canoness with the enhanced blade of Saint Eleanor. I'll come back around to that one, but she's going to be going alongside 10 battle sisters who are split into 2 5s with an immolator. We then have three units of 10 arcoflagellants, 3 units of 5 seraphim with flamers, a unit of 5 zephyrim, and a unit of 10 zephyrim. And then we have 2 units of 2 crusaders, 3 castigators, and 2 rhinos. So really tidy. It's got a little bit of everything in there and a few little pieces that are slightly different. By dropping the Paragon warsuits, I can go triple castigator, triple arcos, but I can also find the points to go triple zephyrim and get a big brick of zephyrim in there. So 3 times 5 seraphim and then 1 big brick of zephyrim in there. So I have a lot of fast moving infantry in the list, and I found both in UKTC and also in 10th edition in general, holding your second primary point is something that's quite easily solvable. Like holding those 10 primaries, so 2 objectives, is quite easily solvable within many lists. You can kind of dump enough OC on there and make your opponent think, oh, it's not worth dealing with this. But actually denying your opponent's 10 primary is one of the most powerful ways of winning the game. So I dropped the Paragon warsuit, so I've lost my strategic reserve threat from something like that. But the 10 Zephyrin offer me a unit with 10 OC that can come out of Deep Strike Rapid Ingress, which is much stronger on UKTC. And then they move 12 inches. And while they can't, they don't hit very hard at all. They just have power weapons. They can often do enough damage to flip an objective with their 10 OC. So that's the theory there. At least that threat is available for me, because I think sisters can tend towards very drawish games. They're very powerful both on the primary and the secondary, but they also have this tendency to make a game about who draws slightly better cards to win.
And I think if you go first with sisters and you do dump all of your stuff on your side objective, they just have so many units with such great defensive profiles that, and of course dice behind it, that it's almost impossible to chew. For a shooting army, it's almost impossible to chew through all the stuff on the objective between the Triumph that can resurrect, the Rhino, dice, you know, maybe some arcoflagellants and whatnot like that.
Exactly. And if opponents walk into the threat range where they're attacking those kinds of objectives and trying to fight you, that's when sisters activate. Their whole army starts to activate all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And they just have loads of stuff. So they can start to win on momentum.
Yeah.
So to solve the problem of, especially in the Crucible of Battle missions, where it's very hard to attack your opponent's kind of natural expansion objective right by their deployment zone, things playing out of Strategic Reserve Rapid Ingress or Deep Strike Rapid Ingress are quite strong in that area.
Yeah.
And if people screen out one side, they also struggle to screen out their home objective safely as well. So you have an option of attacking from either side. So I've really liked the 10 Zephyrim and the options that they provide. And they're only 120 points. They're just outrageously cheap for 10 of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice little tool added in there. The other little bit of tech I've added is by having 3 units of 5 Seraphim, which is quite normal, but a lot of people have been taking a big unit of 10 Seraphim with 8 Inferno pistols, so 8 mini melter guns, and attaching Celestine to that unit. Now, I tried that for a few games, and I found because the UKTC forward runes are so small, that unit being 13 models and Celestine being on a bigger base means they stick out really easily.
Yeah.
And your opponent just has easy angles. So I struggle. And also only having an 18-inch threat range, which we mentioned earlier, so they move 12 inches and only shoot 6 inches, is actually quite limited on UKTC. It's very hard to get into threat range against good players. So
I think that's a problem. That's kind of a problem for sisters in general, though, right? Like, let's say one downside is that they're relatively a face-up army, right? Like, if they had access to advance and charge or longer threat ranges, they would be absolutely bonkers strong, right?
Exactly.
The one of the ways you have to do play against them is like mapping out, you know, okay, you do move 7 and then you can dice and whatnot like that. Although adding the consistency for making charges like 7, 8, 9 inch charges super consistent or guaranteed is obviously extremely powerful as well.
Yeah, it is.
And, but it doesn't increase your overall threat range more than an advance and charge would, for example.
Yeah. While the 18-inch mark isn't great in UKTC, the 22-inch mark, which is arcoflagellants coming out of a rhino, 10 inches, and then a theoretical maximum threat range of 12 inches, is long enough to trouble a lot of people.
Yeah.
So in that sense, there is a bit of threat express there, which opponents can't really avoid very easily. So I have liked that side of things, but I wanted to get one more unit like that that moves a little bit faster. And I tried this idea of attaching Celestine to 5 Seraphim and having 4 Flamers in the Seraphim unit, and Celestine's got a slightly stronger Flamer as well.
Yeah.
And this unit is absolute boss. It's so good. It's small enough to hide into areas. When it charges stuff, the Seraphim leader has 3 power sword attacks, and so did the Geminae Superior joining the Celestine. So that's 9 power sword attacks, and then Celestine's got 5 slightly bigger 2 damage attacks. And then the unit has 5 Flamers, 4 of which are pistols, and it also expresses OC8. Mm-hmm. That is an amazing unit on UKTC as an early game skirmishing and trading piece, which allows for some primary denial, scoring secondaries, and controlling areas with Overwatch to make it quite awkward for your opponent. So I've been a big fan of that little bit of tech.
Yeah, I think Celestine is great. It's really it's a great target unit, really, in so many ways, isn't it? It's quite very fast and obnoxiously tanky.
Yeah,
12-inch move. I do like the thing about the 10 sister squad with the pistols, though, is that if you do poke a few models out, you will get access to, if you get shot, for example, you know, then you resurrect one, you do get access to the ignore modifiers stratagem, right? So you can then ignore modifiers against some, you know, half damage things or something like that.
Absolutely. I mean, people are including them in their list for 2 very obvious things. One is killing Bulgrin, and one is killing Catan with Necrons. And I think against Bulgrin, they are good. I think they're a net positive for the list in the guard matchup.
Yep.
But it's still extremely hard to activate them. They stick out against guard who are going to tend to run a second tank commander on this terrain format. For you to activate them, it has to be your opponent running into you and they're the counterpunch.
Which is usually a mistake.
And is that a bit too slow? Is that going to work against good players? It's really like, you know, these questions go into my head and I'm just like, oh, let me just go wider. If in doubt, just go wider.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally understand. I think sisters are they're in a really, really good spot at the moment. They're really, really strong, and they're the type of army where you think, you know, I'm killing like 300 or 400 points a turn, And it's just like, you're still just like losing the game.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, sisters can play five turns extremely well because they will have stuff at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can kind of just keep throwing stuff at your opponent, keep scoring your points and wearing them down. Yeah. And if you ever get like a moment, and that happens in any game, regardless of faction, a moment where your opponent has kept like a weak area where if you kill that area, they'll never be able to attack it again. Yeah. In the mid game, sometimes that just completely swings games towards you.
For sure.
And sisters can exploit that quite well. Mm. I've really liked, because I don't have Varl's unit now, that's 300 points, which used to be in strategic reserves. Now I have the capacity to put a lot more of my stuff in strat reserves. And I'm finding I'm putting 10 arcoflagellants in strat reserves a lot.
Yep.
And just trying to go for the 9 in charge. It's fine. Yep. Throw a 6 in, 3 plus. That is a massive momentum swing if I hit that.
Yeah.
If you want to screen it, so I don't mind. Screen it. Screen all you want. It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, or you could rep in Ingerson, right?
Exactly.
It's fine as well. Yeah, I like putting them in reserve. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, oh, against cool. Guard, that's a really key strategy.
For sure, yeah. Well, that'll be Oxford. So when is the tournament? It's this weekend coming up, right?
This weekend starts tomorrow. So,
What have you got for round one?
Round one, I've got a Space Marines again. I get a lot of Space Marines. My whole life is spent playing Space Marines. And this time it's a Flamestorm list. Really cool list. It's like not too conventional, which is, you know, which is always something you want to see, because sometimes the conventional lists in UKTC can be really brutal. But this one, he's got... it's a Dark Angels Flamestorm list. It doesn't have any Flamers, but it has a few units of Inceptors, 2 Gladiator Reapers, a Predator Destructor. He's got 3 Redemptor Dreadnoughts, so quite a lot of anti-infantry in there, a lot of vehicles as well. And that's basically the list is built with a bit of chaff around that. Thunderstrike as well, no Storm Ravens. No Storm Ravens is the key.
Yeah. Yeah. You go to a UKTC tournament and you see like 10 Storm Ravens.
Exactly.
Like, well, yeah. We live on killing people. Yeah. Nice. Nice. That'd be fun. Yeah. I was, I'm taking the weekend to chill out. I've been playing a lot recently this month. So, well, not this month, but prior to that, playing a lot, ETC, Manchester, and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I've actually been, for the first time, playing the least I've ever played, I think. If I look back on this month, I haven't played a single game since Manchester Tournament. Not a single game. And when was that? That was like a month ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, you've taken a little break to maybe explore some other games and things as well, which is quite cool.
Yeah, a bit of a spoiler. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess like what... Yeah, it's a bit of a weird sensation for me. I guess the thing is I played so much Guard that... Like, if I were to go to a UKTC tournament, I've kind of played all those games before, you know? Like, you play 5 rounds and, you know, you're not really going up against, like, a new army, a game that you haven't... And when I say I've played them before, I've played, like, that matchup 3 or 4 times, like, on that board. So it's kind of... It sucks the joy out of it a little bit if you already kind of know the play patterns of everything to that kind of level of depth. So I was, like... I decided a couple of weeks back, I was like, I'm just going to chill for a bit. Wait for the game to shake up. But in the meantime, a friend of mine, Lewis, got me into Marvel Crisis Protocol, which I'm trying not to laugh as I say it now. But MCP, it's another board game, if you don't know what it is. It's a kind of hero-based board game, superhero-based board game. And just, you know, just to keep it on theme here, I don't know any of the lore. I don't know. I watch any of the movies. I don't know what most of them. I'm like, you know, who is this guy? Go on, I just read the data sheets, right? But it's been a nice break. I played some Raider games and stuff like that. I've been playing a little bit online, playing like a wizard style list and stuff. It's been cool. It's been cool discovering a new game and then seeing the differences between MCP and 40K, for example, right?
Exactly.
You know, the largest difference thing there being like alternating activations, right? So maybe some of the listeners might play a different game as well. You know, alternating activations, I think, would be something cool to see more in the game of 40K. And I think that's one of the things that separates 40K from every other game is it's more of a you go, I go game. Mm-hmm. So that's been really, really fun. I've kind of been sucked into the rabbit hole of that, you know, as you can imagine, I like looked at all the top lists and everything, etc. Right. So, it's been fun, but, I'm looking forward to some balance. I'm looking forward to some change actually. I mean, the game is relatively balanced right now, but, I'm looking forward to some you know, changes, shakeups, whether it's good or bad, I think change for the sake of change is going to be net positive here for this point of the game, whereas that's not always true, right? We're in a game, we're in a state, I think, at the moment where it's pretty hard to make something come out and absolutely topple the meta, although, you know, Mega Knobs might be up there, depending, or briefly. However, so I think most of us in the community are probably waiting. I think, when was the last time we had a balance update? It was quite a while ago, wasn't it, Vic?
Yeah.
It was with the Eldari Fate Dice nerf, which must have been about 4 months ago or something.
Yeah, I think it's been a quarter now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And we're coming up to our next quarterly update where we'll have just points.
Yep.
And then the next quarter after that will be points and a balance slate. So we're in the interim one now, the interim service for the game. Where it's just going to be points adjusting things, which is interesting. And I think you brought up a really good point about change for the sake of change. Mm-hmm. And normally I'm really against that. But I think in this situation, that's exactly what the game needs. And it's what a perfect position to do this from, because we're used to, in the last edition, the game being turned upside down by new codexes and them having to fix that one broken thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we had the start of 10th edition and the multiple indexes came out, which were a little bit too strong. And one was extremely overpowered, which was the Eldar one. And that required multiple emergency fixes to try and get under control. Then we even had CSM, which was too strong, and we required that. Now we're in a stage where our strongest army is probably Necrons here.
Yeah.
And they're not really brutally overpowered or anything. They're just really strong.
Yeah, I definitely think we're critiquing the game through a kind of rose-tinted glasses at the moment, aren't we? Compared to, you know, harken back to when I did a monologue about the launch of 10th edition, and let's be honest, the kind of dire straits the game was in. It was not a good game, I think, when 10th edition launched, especially coming from the back of 9th edition, right? You kind of view things in relative to the past where they were. So, you know, nowadays it's, you know, pretty solid all around. I think there are a few worrying things in the game, but I'm going to get onto that before we discuss the points. So before we do that, I'm going to click some interlude music, and then we're going to go through, I'm just going to roll through from top to bottom all the factions, and Vic and I are going to have a chat about what we would like to see generically if we don't really know the faction well enough, but or specifically if we do know the faction well enough. So let it go, and we'll see you here in part two when you're going to get the wish list coming. Wish list.
Yes.
You mean good? What's Santa going to deliver?
5 points up in my whole army. That's what all I want. Just 5 points.
Yeah, I think sisters only need about 2% increase in points.
That's it. You know,
we'll bring Manticore down.
Manticore's up 70. Triumph of St. Catherine down 100.
Oh, I see. Yeah. There we go. All right, you guys have probably... there we go. I'm going to stop it abruptly. But you guys have probably been... foreshadowed about what we're going to be laughing about. Obviously, this is a reflection of what we chat about the team a lot. You know, I think every team, if you're a part of a club, you know, your WhatsApp or your Discord is probably dominated by, you know, the 15 subjective opinions from 10 different people around what they think deserves what, and et cetera, et cetera. And that just goes to show, as I've said so many times, is that Warhammer, despite how objective we try and become, is ultimately a very subjective game, because there's just so few data points to really try and be objective off, really. You know, we've got stats, and, you know, I think, if anything, from this balance patch, we've shown, personally, that win percentage stats are, you know, are an interesting, you know, mechanic to visualize and understand how powerful armies are, but they don't necessarily... explain the reach that an army has, for sure.
Yeah, I think win percentage is excellent for identifying those armies that are severely broken. When Eldar was hitting 70% plus, yes, okay, win percentage is useful there. But we're in a situation where the majority of the armies sit around the 50%, and individual certain players jumping on factions, creating trends, can cause so much influence around that level that the win percentage isn't necessarily the best indicator of game balance, game imbalance at the moment. So that's my take. And you've obviously proved that with Guard and the whole episode we've gone through with that. And, you know, I was watching the Mordian Glory. That's a really good channel, that one.
Yeah.
about your kind of thing, your guard list. He was running through all of that and the Reddit stuff, etc. And the takes are so balanced now on guard. People are accepting, you know, there is a lot of strength in that faction.
Yep.
Whether or not they're overpowered or broken, I don't think anyone's saying that. I think they're just better than the win percentage suggests. Yep. And that just proves it.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to go. I've got the stat check win rate, you know, or the hub. It's called stat-check.com/the-meta. And I thought that might just be a good way of sorting it, because then we can start from the bottom to the top. Obviously, there's going to be a few speed bumps in here. Vic, I think what will be good is we go through this faction by faction, and then maybe let's go Hugo, or if you really want to talk on a topic, you know, you can take it. But for the ones that we don't really know broadly enough, you know, for in-depth specific, because heads up, there will be some which we'll have like in-depth points suggestions for. Maybe let's just kind of see what we'd like to get into. Yeah. So what would be cool is we can start off with Chaos Space Marines, because actually the last balance patch, I think Vic and I may have been the only content creators out there to say that the nerfs were too harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really something, because I was pretty pissed off about how much stuff this army got. And its Dark Pact mechanic being mega powerful, amplifying, you know, basic units like Rhinos and Firing Deck up to, you know, legitimately lethal platforms. So Chaos Space Marines, Vic, if we're only touching points, and this is only points, that's, as we currently understand it, that's the only lever that's going to be pulled for the balance coming up. What would you like to see as a general thing? Or if you've got some specific units you'd like to see changed, you know, what would it be?
Yeah, you have to be careful with CSM. It's a really, really tricky balance, because adjusting the points on CSM doesn't create what, like how I describe, like a linear effect to their overall effectiveness. Yeah. Like if you reduce their points cost by 10%, they don't become 10% stronger. They become 30 or 40% stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened with the nerf. They got a nerf in a number of areas which look quite small, but when combined, it actually significantly dropped the power level of the army.
Hmm.
Now, I would say with CSM, a lot of their reduced win rate is probably more to do with people jumping off the faction and the innovation in the faction drying up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's been some talk amongst top players of good lists, and people have shown extreme success still in testing with CSM. So CSM are good at the moment. What I would say is that CSM, design-wise, had a problem that the Dark Pact mechanic greatly favored their shooting profiles.
Sure.
So if you have these units like Obliterators and Forge Fiends, which are not priced appropriately, they're actually extreme damage output wire range.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas CSM, in a lot of people's minds, is very much a melee-focused army with some shooting support. And I think they could lean into that more. They did a points increase on Warp Talons, which I think was a little bit harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of an overall kind of general increase for CSM, when actually if they thought about it, if they kept the increases more on the shooting platform, so I'd argue even the Predator, Destructor, and Annihilator could go up from here.
Yep.
And instead you reduce the cost of units like Chosen. I know Chosen were a menace, but you could still make them cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors and the Legionaries and the Warp Talons, and make people lean into the infantry melee units. I think CSM players would greatly appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that kind of ties in with kind of the nerfs that we saw previously as well, kind of undoing some of those ones, right? You know, just remember, because it's been a while since you played against CSM. It certainly has been for me. But the Nurgle Strat is now 18 inches as well, right? So, you know, the Rhinos aren't so oppressive as they used to be with the untargetable 12-inch that could basically stage in the middle of the board and you still couldn't shoot it. So I think that's that nerf is still secretly hindering the melee, despite how cheap the melee could possibly be.
Exactly. It's you just can't stage in quite the same way. So you need more stuff to compensate that for CSM. Yeah.
Let's roll on to Adeptus Mechanicus. Now, I've only seen a few games of this faction, but this faction actually has some really good units in it, like the Skitarii Vanguard, the Dune Rider, Taraxi Skystalkers, and Sterilizers. Those units are actually, I think, genuinely very competitive for their price. You know, they're really cheap. They, you know, they're very similar to like Seraphim or Zephyrim, you know, Deep Strike, Fire and Fade, mechanic type units, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are awful to transport and play on the board, but where I would like to see AdMech gets point drops on Well, Castellan robots, one, that's for sure, because I think that those are such a cool unit. But I would, broadly speaking, like to see the big long-range shooting platforms that are more static, so like, you know, their vehicle platforms, I would love to see them get cheaper. So disintegrators, Onager Doom crawlers, Castellan robots, even to the point where they could field quite a bit of it, where Bring It Down might be actually something good to take against them. And I think that would put them in a really, really good spot, actually. You'd have a mixed combined force of, heavy backline shooting with some objective play, some, you know, ultimately really useful pieces that can do secondaries and tactics. So that's what I'd like to see for them.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I have only played against them once. Mm-hmm. But I've seen them doing okay at tournaments recently, interestingly. Yep. But I think all the units you've mentioned are units that people have identified as being a little stronger than maybe people have given them credit for.
Yeah. Speaking of units that come down from Deep Strike and Fire and Fade, Tyranids is up next. now, Tyranids is an interesting one, I think, because Tyranids are actually quite strong. And if you play them in team compositions, or if you play a lot of team events, you'll know that Tyranids actually do definitely have a spot in 8. And some people even regard them as highly as being in 5s. Mm-hmm. So they've obviously got a strength. And I think a lot of that is underpinned by the so-called gargoyle, isn't it, Vic?
Yeah, but exactly. For at least that build. The European side is seeing a lot of success with that particular build, which is actually super strong, to be honest, in teams. You just have a carpet of gargoyles with a little bit of shooting behind it. Mm-hmm. And you just play extreme primary denial. And the gargoyles are fantastic at that.
So what I would like to see is actually gargoyles go up a little bit, because I think they are too cheap at the moment. And I would love to see some of the big, brilliant monsters kind of be reduced in cost. So Swarmlord, I'd like to see maybe even Carnifex, but some of the slower, like Zone Throats, definitely. I would like to see some of that stuff come down to emphasize more a combat force that's actually a little bit more interactive to play against, rather than just your opponent potentially move blocking you turn after turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go.
I think, you know, just looking at 10th edition as a whole, what I would like to see is just a general trend of not decreasing points on range units and slightly decreasing points on things which only have melee.
Sure.
Because I think there's a lot of benefit to that, because at some point you get too much melee stuff that you can approach the opponent, and the range stuff won't be cheap enough that you can blow them off the board. Mm-hmm. And I think those kinds of games forces people into more balanced lists.
Yep.
And then you start engaging in the middle of the board as well. Yep. So now that we're into the stage of we're not trying to fight a fire of a game falling apart, we're more into game balance to make a better overall experience for everyone with little tweaks. That's a general trend I'd like to see across the board. And Tyranids and CSM are no exception to that.
Yeah, and going back to MCP, you know, maybe having more combat, you're going to be having more alternating activations, and I think that'd be a bit more of a funner experience for both players, right?
Definitely.
Coolio. Speaking of alternating activations, orcs. Now, we don't really know what's going to be coming out here, but I think we've all seen the Mega Knob profile, and I'm just going to say it now. This is a terrible profile to be put into the game. I don't know why they printed this data sheet. It better be really expensive, because I've seen the math on these things. And against, apart from melters, exactly, they are 50% more tankier than wraiths. So I understand wraiths have reactive move and lone op, but I mean, against damage AP 0 and AP 1, these things are like 10 times more tanky than wraiths or something. So I think that, you know, given what we've seen with wraiths and wardens and how unfun that is to play against, and I've said this for like the last 5 podcasts, is that, you know, against these units, you're just rolling dice at your opponent and you're just hoping that they don't roll back at you. And I think the more of that we have in the game, the worse it is for the game, because it sucks out the player skill expression part of the game. So that's the number one thing on my block to get hit on the points, I think. I'd be shocked if they didn't, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very obvious one, isn't it? It's just ridiculous. So, and especially if they come anywhere near the 30 points that they are at the moment.
Yeah.
It's going to be nuts. So, but I think it's so obvious it is something that's probably going to, you know, we don't have the initial day one points, because we know points won't match the codex points. So let's see if, you know, whether it's errated or the points go up crazily on that unit. But it's a very easy one not to point correctly here. It needs to be quite aggressive.
For sure. Okay, here's an interesting one, Vic. Give me your take on World Eaters, because I've played a team tournament with Anthony, and you know, Anthony's been playing a lot of team tournaments recently. Anthony Vanilla, of course, the one person that we seem to be able to point to that does well with this faction. So what's up with that? You know, do you think they're in a fine space?
I think they are in a fine space, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think obviously Anthony's like, he's brilliant and he's doing really, really well. He came over to Europe for two tournaments, absolutely like destroyed everyone, but that's also in a team setting and his pairings were good. You know, he got any team he was on made sure he got really good pairings and he delivered on those. But then, you know, one or two times he hits the kind of matchup against an equally skilled player and like a more drawish matchup between the two. And he ends up getting a normal score. And I think World Eaters do have bad matchups. Any melee army with no shooting behind it that doesn't fly will have bad matchups in the meta. And I think even this Orc Meganob thing, sure, in 10th edition, it's a bit like over the top custodies and orcs that are too cheap, etc., or too durable. But none of them fly. So there are tactics to move block and slow them down and pick them off a bit at a time. And World Eaters fall into that category as well. It is possible to stop them from going through you.
Yeah, there's outplay in that sense. Yeah, I agree. I actually think World Eaters are in a great spot in terms of where we want to get armies to, I think.
Yeah.
Imperial Knights, I think, you know, you could... I just want to see them drop the points on the big knights. That's all I want to see. Drop some points on the big knights, because when have big knights ever been good for, like, the last 10th edition and 9th edition?
Yeah.
Almost never. It's one was, like, Free Blade Lance, whatever it is, you know, Bondsman, and that was like one big knight. You know, I mean, yeah, drop the points on the big knights. You know, I'm perfectly fine with that because it's so easy to skew into the way their secondaries are done these days. I mean, knight players are just, you know, at such a disadvantage anyway.
Yeah, but then, like, think about this, Dave, right? Just think about as a human being, right? think about holistically and ethically. If we want the people who play this game to have a better life, and we want everyone who's playing the game just to enjoy their life more, is there not an argument for the balance team to increase the points on the entire knight index and maybe even make it crusade only, or encourage people to only play their knights in crusade? Because you know, I think that would be better for the game. So that's my take on knights. Let's put the points up across the board, I think.
Shout out to Steve Joel. there we go. All right, now on to the next one, which is Astra Militarum.
Oh,
which,
nice.
Which is cruising at that 47% win rate with 6 event wins, which is about the 6th or 7th highest in the game. So I think that's an interesting discussion point already, but I've got some thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'll do. I'll just rattle them off.
Yeah, let's do it.
Points only, because there's a lot of suggestions I would do that would work with ability changes. But if you're only doing points, then you can't tackle the reinforcement problem of the army, which is a huge kind of... If you're going to do abilities, then that's got to be the core central part of where you focus your changes, is whether or not you want to change reinforcements. But you can't do that, so here's what I'll do. I would put Kaskan up to 110 points. To be in line with Scions at 110 points. So you've got an interesting decision point of whether you play 30 Kaskin or whether you play 30 Scions, or what the mix there is, a 20-10 split, etc. I think that's an interesting decision point. I put Manticles up 15 points, and then I would put Bulgrin up 10 points per 3. Now, what this would effectively mean is that on my list at ETC I played, just for the points increases perspective, that would be 30 points from Manticles, 30 points from Kaskin, and 30 points from Bulgrin. And that would be a 90-point increase all over. I think that that would tackle the right areas, because Manticores kind of shut out the more interesting, you know, they shut out the 3-wound models from being viable. So I don't think that's great for the game. Mm-hmm. Kaskin, because you can't touch reinforcements, should be put up a little bit. Outside of reinforcements, Kaskin are actually not that good for 110 points. Like, if you look at the Sisters units, for example, you know, they're miles better. And then Bulgrin, I think, are a bit too cheap. Primarily because Guard shouldn't be getting that access to that good sustainable combat in an index which is primarily shooting orientated, right? Mm-hmm. Cool. But what would I put down? So I think Guard probably has one of the deepest array of units in its lineup. Obviously, it's not as big as Space Marines, but I think outside of Space Marines, Vic, it's almost the largest.
Yeah, I think so.
Especially if you count Forge World.
Definitely up there.
So here's what I would do. The main parts, I would bring the I would leave the tank commander straight up where he is. I think that's perfectly balanced. I would bring the other tank commander chassis down, not lower, not any lower than 155 points, because then it becomes too cheap for the chassis. And then, you know, there's some like Lehman Russ battle tank, for example, I'd bring that down like 10 to 15 points, maybe. That's kind of where I'm talking about here. To make the distinction between a tank commander and the regular battle tanks a little bit more prevalent, because the tank commander gives orders and has shoot on death, which is, you know, really strong. What I would do is I'd bring the Rogal Dawn down from 260 to either 230 or 240 points. Now, where this is interesting is because the Rogal Dawn is okay. It's not great. You can't field multiple of them, especially in UKTC, because of the terrain rules. They're quite slow. They have no inbuilt rerolls or anything like that. T-Suns will just turn off their save and zap them right off the board. But I think one is a really interesting way to play the game. Then it's an interesting decision point between, do you play a tank commander or a Rogal Dawn for like 25 to 30 more points? And I think that's a legitimate decision boundary, because I could see someone saying, I'd rather take a tank commander and almost a unit of 10 rather than a Rogal Dawn. So I think that creates an interesting decision boundary between those tank profile chassis. I would drop all of the cost of the officers by like 10 to 15 points. All of like the single commissar or whatever it is, the regimental preacher, or it's just like almost the most awful model in the game. You know, like make those 20 points a model, whatever, right? I mean, they give up assassinate, but I would love to have officers cheaper to the point where you can disembark them from a chimera or something and use your order on a unit that's also disembarked to actually be useful. So I think that would be cool. Give you some more like chaff officers. I'd love to see more officers in field in a regiment as well, because I feel like that's where it should be like. Mm-hmm. I would drop the Scion command squad down like 10 to 15 points, such that it's more interesting, so that if you wanted to play a 10-man Scion squad, you can maybe play a 5-man Scion command squad and a 5-man Scion squad and attach them together and come down with like a bit of a hammer unit. But the problem is that you can't reinforce that unit and it gives up assassinate as well. So I think that's an interesting decision boundary. Then some of the other larger changes I'd make, I'd bring Atlian Rough Riders down like 20 points to 120. And I think that they would be a really competitive, you know, they're a fun skirmishing model. They are mounted, so they don't have the speed of like regular models, really. And they have quite a big footprint as well. And I think they're just on the cusp of being good right now. So if you drop them 20 points, you're suddenly fighting for what you're going to reinforce. So you won't always just spam that on Kaskin, and it makes a kind of interesting decision of how much riders would you play versus Kaskin and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that would be, I think that's the Atlian Rough Riders, a more fun way of playing melee and guard rather than Bulgrin. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I'd roughly go. I'd actually make the AP 0 and 1 indirect slightly cheaper. So I'd make the Bombast Field Gun. I'd probably drop that 10 to 15 points. And then I would, because the AP 0 and AP 1 indirect is actually not that oppressive. It's the fact when you can get it to AP 3 and 4 with multiple damage that it's really a problem. So I'd probably bump the Basilisk up 10 points, but then reduce the other costs of other units that have the indirect profile by a little bit. And like the Bombast Field Gun has a huge, has a very large footprint. So you could field them, but they're really easy to shoot. So that's a lot different from like a Basilisk, for example, that has a tough chassis and you can hide. So yeah, I'd bring Sly Marbo down at least 20 points. I'm not even joking. I mean, he's not that great at the moment. So I'll leave him where I'd bring him to like 50 points, give you an infiltrate lone op guy, which I think Guard would really, really need. And he's really cool. And Gaunt's Ghost, I'd probably leave exactly where they are. I think they're perfectly balanced kind of where they are. So that's the way I'll change it. I'll try and encourage players to play more rounded units, encourage more diverse play styles, and nerf the obviously good things. I don't think they'll do it, but it'd be really cool if they changed the points on like the Valkyrie, for example, like drop that like 50 points, you know, and then the Crasius transport, the one that can transport like 35 units, the big Forge World one, I would drop that by like 50 points as well, or whatever it is to, you know, if you want to play your 20-man Deathcore Krieg in a crisis, I think that's cool. So, yeah, that's what I'll do.
Let me do an exercise with you then.
Sure.
If all of those changes happen that you've just listed here, Dave.
Yep.
Two questions. One is, how would you change your list?
Sure.
And what do you think the strongest archetype would be?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I wouldn't play the Manticores 195. I'll tell you that now.
Mm-hmm.
I would swap out the two Manticores, leave the two Basilisks, probably add the Bombast Field Gun. Mm-hmm. I would swap out the six-man unit of Bulgrin. I would definitely put in Sly Marbo and 10 Atlan Rough Riders. I'd swap out 10 Kaskin for 10 Scions. And then I would swap out the Lehman Rust Battle Tank. I would maybe swap into a Dawn whilst cutting... Well, I've got cut two Manticores already, so that I could easily fit that in. So, and then I'd probably get Sly Marbo in there as well. So the list would probably be somewhere along the lines of like Sly Marbo, Leontis, Infantry Squad Creed, Tank Commander, Dawn, maybe like 20 Kaskin, 10 Scions, three Bulgrin, a Chimera, two Scout Sentinels, and then like 10 to 20 Rough Riders. It looks something like that, and maybe like an officer in there, depending on the points off the top of my head. But you're losing two Manticores of damage, which is really big.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, taking the damage out of the indirect is probably the key to nerfing Guard into a more sensible spot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fair enough. No, that sounds good. I think I think that's a very reasonable take with some give and take in your balance update there.
Yeah, so sorry to monologue for a bit, but
no problem. I mean, if it was me, I'd be a lot more. I'd definitely go with all of your points reductions.
Okay.
But anything with the indirect keyword, I wouldn't reduce the points, and I would increase it like double what you've done. Like if it's purely damage focused indirect, those should just be obliterated from the game, in my opinion. I'd love to see D cannons doubled in points, separated from the other indirect platforms, and just obliterated, because they're just pure damage output.
Yeah,
and indirect being like that is always a problem every single time.
I think the Basilisk is an interesting one, because the Basilisk is obviously not very good against armored chassis. But it's infantry slow ability is actually crucial to so many of the games.
Oh, the output's too good, Dave. It's 8-2-2. It's outrageous.
So yeah, exactly right. So that's why I said maybe 10 points on the Basilisk. But
it's too kind. You're too kind to the indirect. It's got to be brutal. Otherwise, otherwise you will just have to lean into it, because indirect is so powerful in this game.
Yeah.
That unless you make it really difficult, like the Exorcist is the perfect example. Right, running an Exorcist in the army, in the Sisters army, feels bad. It feels like you're taking too much out of your list, and maybe you could stretch to having one in the army.
Yeah,
I would even increase the point on the Exorcist again, just put the nail in the coffin. But actually, in terms of balance, they've hit the right balance there. But as if you increase the point on the other Sisters units, the Exorcist starts to become more appealing again.
Yeah,
and I think, and the Exorcist is only for damage. It's indirect. It should not be good. It just needs the points up again, in my opinion. But yeah. I run all the indirect, but I have a very strong opinion on how much I dislike it.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I think it's a very tough faction to balance, because the win rates are really not represented of its strength. But that was a bit of a monologue. Let's cruise on. Good. Gene Steeler Colt, would you change anything? I feel like they're kind of good as they are, really.
I have no idea, to be honest.
Let's blast through these three. Death Guard, Chaos Knights, and Leagues of Votan. I think Death Guard are in a perfectly balanced spot at the moment. And I think Chaos Knights and Leagues of Votan... Chaos Knights, I think you could drop a little bit in points. But Leagues of Votan, I think you're in a pretty decent spot at the moment too, actually.
So are these all like the right in the middle 50% kind of factions?
Yeah, it is bang on 50% right now.
Yeah, I think they sit in a good balance space where they really don't need anything either up or down, unless it's just to mix things up for them, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't hate that either, mixing things up with them. I don't hate that at all. What about Drakari?
Drakari is an interesting one. I actually think Drakari are quite solid, to be honest.
Yeah, sure.
And I think they're going to benefit a lot as the meta evolves. They hit a meta where custodies are good. Mm-hmm. And there's indirect from Guard. And obviously we have Necron Canoptech Court as well at the same time. So I think Drakari will become better as the other kind of strong things in the meta become a little bit weaker.
Sure.
I think Drakari are very well placed. They have a very strong index.
Yeah, so maybe let them simmer for a bit.
Definitely they don't need points decreases. I think that would be a mistake here.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that one. Eldari, I guess we've both played a little bit of this faction. I think for Eldari, I think deep support platforms need to go up. And then I think it needs to get some kind of points across the board, because the main archetypes we've seen is actually just spamming three of every unit, mm-hmm. which is probably an indication that they're a bit too cheap, right?
Yep, I agree.
And then I think some of the key characters need to go up a little bit as well. Now, I say that, but the characters are so iconic to Eldari that that is kind of their playstyle, right? So I understand that the characters are a bit cheaper and a bit undercosted, and that's kind of their faction identity, much like Indirect for Guard, right? I don't want to see too much on stuff like the Wayleaper and Fuegan. I'd rather see it actually be around the other units being increased a little bit. And actually, if you increase the other stuff like Spectres, Hawks, Spiders, then you left the Ortark and Fuegan, for example, alone, I would actually be fine with that personally.
Yeah, I think because Eldar have a really deep index as well. They have a lot of units. So I don't think it's so bad at this stage to start doing a bit of give and take with Eldar.
Okay.
Like making some, I mean, Sweeping Hawks are too cheap for sure. Just increase the points a little bit. Shadow Spectres increase the points a little bit. Warp Spiders can go up a tiny bit as well. But then there are other things, you know, Striking Scorpions, even Fire Prisms.
Yep. It'd
be very interesting if they brought those down a touch so they were used a bit more. Mm-hmm. Increase the Night Spinner another 50% just to just keep that in the back. And D-Cannons, the support weapons, unfortunately, all three of them are tied to each other.
Yep.
But I would probably argue that it could do with another 10 points or so.
Yeah. And Karandras and Howling Banshees, for example, could come down a bit as well, I think.
Oh, yeah. Loads of the Phoenix Lords. They have like 100 characters.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these random little characters that are Phoenix Lords that are non-loan up could be a little bit cheaper. I mean, Morgan Ra is like a ridiculous amount of points over 100.
Yeah.
And he's such a cool model with really cool units, cool abilities.
Yeah.
But he's just too expensive to take at the moment. So I'd like to see like a kind of a wide give and take with Eldar.
Yep.
But I think they're roughly around the correct level. I just think the play style is very strong in 10th edition,
sure.
Of having like extremely fast MSU.
Yep.
Those things need to be targeted with some points increases.
Yep. Yeah, I would like to see minimum 5% across the board. So they're playing with equivalent of 1900, I think. Would be.
I think I'd like to see them play with the same amount, but just with different stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 1900.
If the same list.
Of the same list, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably correct, yeah.
Now, zooming along, I have no idea about this faction, but how is it at 52% win rate? It's Chaos Demons.
Chaos Demons
are terrible. I don't know.
No event wins, I guess.
No event wins, and a very small number of meta representation, I think, as well. I would love to see Chaos Demons come down in points across, like, almost all of their data sheets, I'm being honest with you. Like, Plague Bearers and stuff like that are awful. You know, Bloodletters and stuff like that are, you know, awful if you compare it to, you know, the aforementioned Arcoflagellants. So I would like to see stuff like that come down a lot. I think Chaos Demons are such an iconic faction for 40k as well. It'd be cool to see them being able to, and they've been low for a long time, man. Like, when have Chaos Demons ever been good in 10th edition? I don't think, like, almost never, right? I can't remember the time they've been good.
They messed them up a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah, they've only been in the side cart of Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah, I mean, this win rate's obviously not really telling the full story for Chaos Demons. Yeah. It's a very hard one to balance here. I think they almost just need a new codex at this point.
Yeah, fair. But you've been playing a lot of this one, Grey Knights. What are we thinking? I think they're in a pretty good spot, personally.
I think they're in a great spot. I think there's a lot of viable builds. I think across the board, I would love to see the Land Raider Redeemer go up in cost.
Sure.
Yep. I think it's just a little underpriced as a chassis, just generally. But otherwise, you know, maybe a little bit of a tweak between the Nemesis Dreadnought and the Grandmaster Nemesis Dreadnought, just to get the points a little bit. I'd probably increase the points on the Nemesis Dreadnought, slightly decrease the points on the Grandmaster Dreadnought, and let them meet in the middle.
Sure.
Something like that. And otherwise, all of their other units are quite correctly points costed, I think.
I completely agree. I think the Land Raider can be very hard to interact and make some very unfun games for armies that just have no game against it.
Yeah, it's so just a silly profile. It should have only had one Flamestorm Cannon, not two.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah. Tau, let's skip Tau for now, but let's just say that at current points, breaches are probably too cheap.
Before the Codex, they were too cheap.
But you've been playing this one a lot. What about the old Sisters?
Sisters, yeah. I think Sisters are very strong. I think they're sitting as one of the strongest armies in the game at the moment.
Sure.
I don't think they're into the broken levels, but their stuff is just a little too cheap at the moment. So you get a tiny bit more stuff than you really should. Now, saying that, I think Sisters have some bad matchups. They don't necessarily like immediately win loads of tournaments or anything, but they're just solidly in the upper tier of armies. And I think in terms of updating their points cost, there are a few things which immediately strike me as too cheap. And the main ones are the Triumph of St. Catherine, the Seraphim, and the Zephyrim.
And the Arcoflagellants.
The Arcoflagellants is the one which is a data sheet problem.
And the Castigator.
I've got opinions on this. I think those three are the units that bulk out your army too much. But then you've got some stuff which is edging on this too cheap side. One is Arcoflagellants, but I don't think they're far off where they need to be. At 150 for 10 is actually kind of pricey, because now people have understood how they die and they kind of just die to lasguns. The Castigator is interesting because when you compare it to a Predator, Destructor, or Annihilate, which are the same points, they're 140. This is also 140. The Castigator is good, is better and worse in a way. It's better in the sense that it has more guns and more volume of shots, which is awesome. Sisters love that. But it also leans into Sisters' issue across the board, which is a lack of AP.
Definitely,
It's just AP1 on all of its guns.
And like long range, good firepower is really hard to come by, right?
Yeah, so I would argue that yes, it absolutely should have 10 points added to it, but no more than that.
Yep, well, 100% agree, actually. 10 points is like perfectly fine on it. And I think you're right also in that the stuff that, like the fire and fade mechanics and whatnot like that are, you know, a little bit too cheap as well, right? Like they get so much, like I think Crusaders, I don't know.
Oh, definitely.
It's tough on the balance because it's only a two model unit, but honestly, two model units that are cheap are really good, right?
Yeah, they should go up. I mean, 10 points is almost a 50% increase on them, but I think they should have it. And that would be more appropriate. What you want is to reduce the number of units armies like Sisters and Eldari can take total in their MSU builds. And I think the way to do that is hit the stuff that they're really kind of spamming at the moment with a slight point increase, and then give them something by taking some points off some stuff which you don't see. Like the Penitent Engine is slightly better than the Mortifier at the moment.
Sure.
So maybe slightly increase the Penitent Engine, decrease the Mortifier, and let them meet somewhere in the middle there. I still think Dominions and Retributors could be a little bit cheaper. I think, you know, I would argue that the Rhino could go up a little bit. Repentia could go up a little bit. I know that's an awkward one with Repentia, but you've got to consider what happens when you nerf the top layer, what comes up from the second layer. And you have to kind of preempt some of that stuff. And I'd be careful with Repentia being a bit too cheap. So yeah, just overall, you know, make Sisters have 100 points less and they'll probably be completely fine.
Yep, 100% agree. Next up on the block, Thousand Sons, which I think is low-key one of the best armies in the game right now. Maybe, and not in a singles perspective, because you'll probably run into a great guard player at some point in a big tournament, which might be a strugglesome matchup. But I think T-Sons are fantastic at the moment. They have so much damage. They've got a lot of player skill expression. They fit really well against Necrons as well. And do you think Thousand Sons are a little bit too much? What do you think about that? Because because Magnus is the one, I think, is the most obvious discussion point because he's auto-included in every list and he's a very good model. But he's got a great balance between if you lose him early, it's detrimental. He does buff your whole squad and provide a lot to you as well. So do you think Thousand Sons should get points increases on anything or would you leave them as is?
I would leave the core as it is, which is the Rubric Marines and the characters and Magnus. But I would touch the things on the outside. So I would definitely increase the points on Cultists and Zangor Enlightened, their chaff units. Because actually one of the strongest things for Thousand Sons at the moment is using a big block of Cultists as a big move block. So I would quite aggressively increase the points on those units that could be Zangor's Cultists and Zangor Enlightened. And I'd drop the points on the Terminators a little bit just to give a different option, an alternative to the Rubric Marines. I mean, there's probably an argument to create a little bit more separation between some of the characters, like the Infernal Master going up a bit more again, but the Exalted Sorcerer going down a bit. The one not on disc. But I think they're roughly in the correct area. They just need something just to tone them down a tiny bit.
Yeah, I think it's more of a it's not much of a points question as much of as an ability question there, I think, as well. They're definitely, of all the factions we talked about, I think they're more of the ability side of things. than anything else.
Yeah, it's the output from the Infernal Master, I think, tips them over the edge, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Let's skip Adeptus Custodes because we know that they have a new codex, and let's leave the last but not least Necrons. Yeah. Here we go. Man, these things have been pretty good for a while. look, to me, it's the same problem as Orcs. I think that the current builds, you know, 18 Wraiths, just, you know, I'll just say that as a current build. I think that that oftentimes come down to you rolling dice versus your opponent. And I think that's a really lame play experience for both people. It's also a frustrating mechanic, you know, 4-ups, 5-ups, you know, it's like how much damage you take, which model is it on? You know, it's actually really difficult to track. I would love to see Wraiths go up significantly. And so what I would do is I would increase the points on the Technomancer by about 30, I think, but I'd leave it so it could join Wraiths. But I would also increase maybe 20 points on the Technomancer. I would increase Immortals definitely. I would increase Immortals by probably 15 points, so they're 85 for 5. And then I would put Illuminous Seers up to about 175 instead of a $160. It's way too cheap. Mm-hmm. The Plasmancer I'd probably put up to 80 points instead of 70 to differentiate it from the Chronomancer. And, you know, I think the Catan are perfectly balanced as they are. Mm-hmm. And I think I would put the Monolith up 20 to 30 points as well. I think once you do that and you leave everything else as is, the Canopter Court lists are going to be able to field a lot less. And they're going to be more punished if you do precision out the Technomancer as well. And the Immortals with Seraz are going to get more expensive, so they can't have so many of their units. Because I think the Immortals plus Seraz are really, really too hard to chew through at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe the Doomstalker could go up a touch, a fraction maybe. But yeah, overall, I think that's a really good way of probably hitting the army. I mean, it needs to get hit, right? Like, there's no question that this army needs to get hit right now. It's the most winningest, most event wins, highest win rate. I haven't been able to topple it twice that I played against it. In both my games against Josh Roberts, I wasn't able to kill a single Wraith unit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I'm playing 2,000 points of shooting.
Yeah. It's tough against a good Canoptic Court player. It's very tough for anyone, melee or shooting, to deal with it.
Yeah.
I actually think your changes that you just mentioned there would do it. They'd be good, wouldn't they? They'd be correct.
Yeah. I actually don't think Catan are that overpowered at all. Like, I know when Hypergrip first came out, people were playing like 4 Catan, 5 Catan. They're like, oh my God. And everyone was like thinking the world was dropping. Mm-hmm. But as players kind of played against them often, you know, it's kind of like, well, they're really slow. They're really susceptible to move block. They're only 4 OC on an objective. And if you've actually played with Catan, like, they move 6. They move 6 and they're 4 OC. Like, you're not winning a game or you're tabling someone with Catan, you know? The Nightbringer, I would put up 15 points to be 270 in line with everyone else, of course, because there's no reason the Nightbringer should be 255 compared to the rest of the Catan, I think. I think they should all probably be that same points. The Void Dragon could be 270 as well, I think. And there's the Transcendent as well, I suppose. You know, make them all the same points. They're all basically the same thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that would do it. That put them right into kind of upper mid tier, I think.
Yep, for sure. And they'd still have some viable builds. Like, I think the Monolith is, it's cool that it's good. I think it is, if the rest of the armies in the game are getting nerfed and adjusted, like we said, you'd probably still want to put the Monolith up a little bit because it would be a bit strong in that meta. Yep,
I agree.
Yeah, so there we go. That's
that all of them?
Yeah, we smashed it. Oh, we've got Space Marines, but I need to go in 5 minutes. So give me your 30-second pitch on Space Marines, which I think I know what it would be.
Space Marines are fine. Just increase all the vehicles by a little bit, especially the Black Templar ones.
For sure, yeah. I think the vehicle, the Iron Storm build, the hull spam is both boring to play with and against, I think. It's very monodimensional. Maybe put the Tech Marines up a little bit is a good way of doing that too. But yeah, some of the chassis are just so cheap and that you're playing them like for their defensive profile, even if their guns like not the best output. But they're still good output anyway. You know, like the access to having fallback and shoot are basically on your army wide is quite, you know, obnoxious to play against, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nice.
There we go.
Let's see how close we get.
Yeah. So if you've gotten this far, I will remind you that like, comment, and subscribe. Let us know actually what you think points changes would be, especially for some of the factions that we glossed over. And if you have some ideas on what matchup you would like us to play, you know, don't make me play Guard versus Eldar or something like that, or whatever, Necrons versus Sisters. But if you've got an idea on what you think we should play, do let us know in the comments down below. And there, we will announce when we're going to be playing, sometime soon, but it will be next week after the points drop, so we can keep it nice and fresh and relevant. We hope, you know, you can come by and just hang out. We obviously going to be answering questions and stuff like that. If you got questions for us during the game and stuff like that, it'll be a fun chilled out game. And Vic and I will genuinely be testing probably stuff that we haven't played before. So yeah, we'll probably do the analysis that Vic and I usually do after the game as well, when we're chatting about it, won't we?
Yep, absolutely.
There we go. Thank you. It's been episode 50.1. Look out for 50.2 next week. Good having you guys there.
Cheers, guys. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the 40K Fireside Podcast. Vic and I hope you've enjoyed listening, and we greatly appreciate any feedback that you can provide after the show.